You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Coming up on Nothing Major, we're going to go over our favorite tennis feuds, some from the past, some maybe a little bit current. We'll go over some fan questions. And also, as mentioned on Monday, Crusell came on the podcast. We're going to be dropping his full interview on today's episode. So let's get into the show. All right, welcome back to Nothing Major.
Good job,
everyone. Guys have made fun of me because I don't get into the intro so quickly.
He does like the Phil Mickelson celebration after.
And just
we will have Crusell coming on the podcast later. I forgot, you guys threw me off. All four of us are here again today, as well as Sift Creative, Charlie Fox, his team there. The people behind the scenes of Nothing Major. Thank you, guys. All right, let's get into our favorite tennis feuds. Guys, as mentioned in the pre-intro, some of the memorable ones to go over from a little bit from the past is Andy Murray versus Lucas Rasol. Andy Murray had a quote that said, no one likes you on the court. Sampras versus Agassi is probably like the all-time, in my mind at least, growing up watching them. Feud, Serena Williams versus Maria Sharapova. This is more rivalry, right? It's not necessarily, I don't think everyone dislikes each other. This one's hilarious. Nick Kyrgios versus everyone.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Nick Kyrgios versus the world. And Djokovic versus Federer and Nadal. Fans, Casper Ruud versus Holger Rune and Tsitsipas versus Zverev. They've had a little beef in the past. Any of those stick out to you, Sam, of the ones I mentioned?
Kyrgios versus the world. I feel like, you know, he just kind of looks for fights. He thinks he's all, you know, he kind of plays like the victim card all the time for no reason. But it's just that's his shtick, you know? That's why he's so popular. If you like ask around the world, someone, an average sports fan, oh, who do you want to watch play tennis? They're like Sinner, Alcaraz, Novak, Federer, Nadal, Kyrgios, like makes that list because Nick just like stirs around controversy and like has all these not crazy takes, but just outbursts. And that's what makes him popular. So for me, like it's Kyrgios versus the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good one.
Stevie?
One's not on this list. I would put just, I think it's a little hard to explain, but it'd be Medvedev versus just like small things that he can't get over. just in general.
That's good.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
there'll be something like inconsequential that happens and then it blows up into something great. You know, obviously we saw the US Open, like, could have just gone about his business, right? And like, let it slide. The cameraman made a mistake, moves on. But no, it turns into this like massive ordeal. And it's just like, you just got to get over it. But, you know, it could be anything with him. You never know what's going to set him off. It could be just the smallest thing. But once it goes, train's off the tracks. And I love it. And I'm here for it.
Yeah. Like Medvedev when he was flicking the little shekels at the...
When he's like, yeah.
Oh, right? That's he's my like, favorite Medvedev
take some money.
Moment.
Like you're getting paid. Like yeah. Things like that. It's just... It's funny.
Favorite, you know, it's unbelievable. My favorite moment ever, too.
Yeah.
Jack, the fact that Medvedev, real quick, had a little, you know, like the coin pouch.
Yeah.
He was like flipping coins.
Of coins. Like
he's a leprechaun.
Know.
Like he's feeding birds.
I know. But it's some rubles.
I mean, mine's going to be Kyrgios versus everyone only because of the Kyrgios Tsitsipas Wimbledon match. For me, it was just hilarious. We had a tennis player. They were going at it so much that we had a player starting to hit balls outside of the court and 100 miles an hour at scoreboards. And it's at Wimbledon, which is obviously one of the most like tight knit, like polite venues. And you never know what you're going to get. And it's entertaining for some people don't like it, but yeah.
Yeah. I think for me, cause I'm the oldest of the bunch. I don't know. I like Sampras versus Agassi. It's not like they're arch enemies, but you know, there's obviously clearly a huge rivalry there. I don't think they are maybe the best of friends, but again, not enemies. But watching those two guys with me growing up, watching those two guys play in the finals of big tournaments, and you know, Sampras, you know, beating Agassi at the U.S. Open finals, they played a match 4 tiebreakers, no breaks. I knew I was going to be an aspiring bot after watching that one. So, no, I don't know. I for me, it's Sampras Agassi, like 2 all-time. Pete Sampras, my favorite player ever. But I loved watching those two guys go at it. 2 completely different personalities. Just iconic stuff there for me.
Can I go like a legendary one, like way back in the day? Like you guys will have to Google this for sure because doing some research is McEnroe Connors. Like, obviously, they played each other a million times, different styles, personalities, you name it. But they played an exhibition match in 1982 in Chicago. An exhibition, 5-set exhibition match. Connors crosses the net and is, like, about to fight McEnroe over arguing with the line calls. And we're talking an exhibition match. Like, this means nothing. You know, but the videos, I'll have to send you guys clips of the videos. It's unbelievable. This exhibition, like, we're just out there to entertain the crowd. They're playing a 5-set match, which is ridiculous in itself.
Yeah,
but they're like about to come to blows, which is the best part. So, I mean, those guys, legendary feuds back in the day, and this was a good one.
That's good. I also want to piggyback on like the Sampras Agassi, like John's talking about. I think because their game styles, contrasting game styles, serve and volleyer versus like Agassi, the returner, you know, that like helped with the feud too, that their games were so different.
Absolutely. I don't know, like watching Pete like chip and charge. Like, wouldn't you guys, no one's going to ever do that possibly ever again, like in today's game on the men's side. Wouldn't it be awesome to see like someone like just chip and charge 90% of the time on second serve returns?
Yeah. It'd be so cool.
We're good.
So it was just, the courts were faster. The balls were faster back then. It was easier to do. Not so much now, but I think that was a good little segment. Like Serena Williams versus Maria Sharapova. Obviously Serena dominated that rivalry, if you want to call it, but there's a lot of mutual respect there. I mean, just look what happened at the Hall of Fame. So yeah, when we say feuds, it's more rivalries, I think. Like, I mean, for the most part, you know, Runa and Rude, like they had that one thing at the Roland Garros, but it's behind them.
Yeah.
It's not really like too much, like really, really bad blood.
No.
All right. What about players that y'all really disliked on tour? Do we want to get into this? Anyone? Sam, did you like have anyone that you just?
Yeah, but I just like don't feel like we could. I could say right. Like, what do you? I mean, I don't know. We could talk. Let's openly discuss this. But like, I don't know. I feel like it's mean. Like, there's one guy.
Not mean.
I can't, there's
like,
one guy I like absolutely hate. But like, I'm just like, I can't just say it right now. Then the guy's still playing.
Oh,
you know.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And just
can we get a country of origin?
No. Oh.
Is there any chance he'd ever come on the pod?
There's a chance he would come on the pod. He didn't necessarily know I hate him, but like he's a tool. I don't think you guys would probably like him either.
Can you put it in the chat just so we can react?
Yeah, I'll put it in the chat.
All right. Stevie and Jack, do you guys have anyone?
Yeah, I've mentioned on here. I'm not a big fan of Karlovich. Not my favorite. Okay. Or like Rasol back in the day. Like, he was brutal.
Yeah.
Lucas Rasol was tough as well. But like Jack, like you said, like you don't deal with him, right? Like, you just don't practice it. Like, it doesn't matter.
Marcelo Melo.
Oh, he almost killed
him.
That's
a double. Hey, that's a double player for our fans. No one knows.
Yeah, I would say in the feuds thing, me in a bad mood on a doubles court, I was probably in some in the feuds thing as well. Dude, yeah. I just like,
you were a jerk on the doubles court if you got grumpy, or like,
oh man, you always put your partner in a tough position, Jack.
You guys keep saying that, but you know.
I'll never forget that Shanghai match against Lopez and Lopez.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Feliciano Lopez, he also.
It was a bad move. If you, like, went at Jack or, like, somehow pissed you off on the doubles court, like, you were done. Jack, like, he was just going to take over the court.
Yep.
Yeah, it wasn't the worst thing. It was to use it to my motivation.
And then our first-round opponents that in that tournament, Jack, we played, like, the Chinese wild cards, and they were like, rightfully, like, getting, like, fired up. Right? It was a big match, and, like, maybe they went a little too extreme and, like, you know, early on in the match when they made it 2-2 or something, and you're like, I'm so pissed. I'm going to kill these guys. Took some forehands at them unnecessarily.
I had a lot of confidence on the doubles court. Felt like I could back it up. So I.
For sure.
It's bad.
Well, my guy was Gulbis.
I like Gulbis.
Okay.
Yeah, like,
did he do something to you or what?
Yeah, so he just is always like a total, like, D-I-C-K on the court. Like, I don't know.
We're not talking to our kids here, John. Everybody who's listening can spell.
I got no issue with Gulbis. I thought it was nice enough.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
But anyways, that wasn't on the rundown.
It's easier to say Gulbis because, like, you know, he's not listening to the pod in Latvia. My guy,
It's not a bailout. It's the one.
Bailout.
He's probably not listening to the pod.
You think Karlovich listens to the pod?
What is Ernest Gulbis doing right now? Does anyone think?
Counting his parents' money? I don't know.
Smoking a cigarette in a Latvian nightclub?
I feel like he is. Like, driving around a super nice, like, expensive car.
Yeah.
I don't know.
My guy's playing spike ball on the beach in the Maldives right now.
That's true.
All right. Could you guys remember any, like actual, like, stuff almost blowing over in the locker room? Like, between two competitors?
Lopez came at me in the Houston locker room one time.
I heard story once of, like, someone's coach, like, getting into it with Kyrgios, the Australian Open locker room one time. I can't remember it, though.
Oh, yeah.
A doubles match where Kyrgios was just doing something. But, yeah, I can't remember, like, two players going at it.
No, it usually just dies down. I'd like them to. I like more excitement, but it usually dies down.
Yeah.
All right. Good segment, guys.
The guy I'm talking about with, I can't even talk right now, that I didn't like, by the way. Not that we got in a fight, but, like, sharing a practice court one time, and, like, with guys, and, like, practice totally stopped for us to, like, yell at each other for, like, 6 minutes on the practice court.
I've never heard this before.
What'd you guys get into it about? Like, or we don't, I guess then he'll know. Yeah.
Well, you really got to, like, right. It takes a lot to get Sam fired
up. That's why I want to know.
Because Sam will just leave before it gets to that point. But this time, Sam stayed. Yeah. I remember it now.
He stayed. Yeah.
He's out of principle. Guys,
I can't share. I know this is annoying. This is, like, awful. I'm teasing everyone. But, like, I can't say the name. It's like
when we finish the recording, actually, I want to know.
Yeah.
All right. That does take a lot for Sam to get, like, really, really perturbed. You're, like, a super even keel guy. So I want to hear the story as well. You guys do some fan questions really quick. Oh,
yeah. Let's do a couple fan cues.
Do a couple.
From Tennis Charles, who were the biggest what ifs in tennis? For example, Hyun Chung made it to the Australian Open semis, hasn't been heard from really since. He's been obviously dealing with a lot of injuries. Dinara Safina was at the top of the women's game, but faded. Brian Baker, we all know Brian Baker. He had so many injuries. He's the associate head coach at Wake Forest right now. Maybe guys like Kyrgios. How about this? Ernest Gulbis. We just spoke about it. I did not see this. What are some – you guys have anyone, like, some big, like, what ifs in tennis?
I think Chung is like the biggest one just because he made the semifinals of the Australian Open, got that crazy blister on his foot, and then like vanished off the face of the earth. And he was like 22 years old. I think everyone had him penciled in as a guy who was going to be like top 10 for a while. And then John said, where is the dude? I don't know what happened to him.
Yeah. I know he started playing Challengers again at some point.
He did. Yeah. I saw him like he was.
He like kind of comes back a little bit here and there, but nothing stuck. Like it just.
Yes, Safina. I forgot about Safina. Like that's a name that you don't hear about at all anymore. Murat's sister.
Didn't she make number one in the world though, or like win a slam?
Yeah. No. Yeah.
That's not a what if.
Yeah. Maybe not.
Number one in the world is not a what if. Like.
Good point.
Yeah, I also think what ifs are more injury related. Like if that hadn't stopped them, instead of like work ethic or like applying yourself more, then that's just a choice and you're not doing it.
This is just a thought process. Is like Agassi kind of a what if he didn't go for like that mental break for, you know, maybe not a mental break, but for like 4 years? Like if he
could
was just
in a what if, you're saying.
No, I'm saying like could it like could, you know, how many more majors could he have had if you know what I mean? Like he didn't. That's not really a what if, right? He has, you know, 8 slams or whatever, but
that takes you to the what if too. Like how many more would Novak have without COVID because he missed 6 slams during that time? Like would he have another 2 or 3? Probably.
Yeah, no, that's a good question.
Yeah, he got kicked out of Australia. Likely would have won the Australian Open that year. It's just completely absurd. I think Brian Baker is a good one for sure. Our listeners who do not know who Brian Baker is. Is he grew up in my section. I'll give him a little intro. We're exactly the same age. We're 4 days apart. An absolutely legendary junior player, untouchable at really every single age group. And he was one of those kids, never tailed off. He wasn't dominant in 12s and 14s and wasn't as good in 16s and 18s. He was even better in the 16s and 18s. He did not go to college, which was the right choice. He was far too good to go play college tennis. Yeah. And got his ranking up really high, really quickly. And the injury bug like really, really bit him. He's had something like I play fantasy football with him still. Like he's a good guy, but he had something like 16 or 17 surgeries in his life. Like it's absolutely crazy. And he took 5 years off at one point. Like we thought like from like 22 to 27, like he's done, he's retired. He's getting his college degree. And he told me he came back and he said his body like felt pretty good. Like finally for the first time in ever, he felt pretty good. So like I'll start hitting tennis balls again. And a year later, he got the 60 in the world.
Yep. It's amazing. Yep.
Sam, he played. Tell him what happened when he played.
Sam ended
Australian
his career
Open.
Basically.
I played my Australian Open, whatever year that was. First set was a tiebreaker. Second set, like the second game, something happened. He blew out his knee, I think.
Oh yeah.
And then never recovered. But John said it best. Like 18 surgeries, so unfortunate, but great guy and like would have been a perennial top 50 player
for sure.
Had his body 100%. Not just given up on him when he was 20 years old.
He is one of the best ball strikers of all time.
Yeah.
He's up there, dude. Like for people that don't know, that might be a crazy claim, right? But you, Stevie.
Yeah, yeah.
He hit the ball that pure, like, especially on the backhand side.
Both sides, always on the center of the frame. Just.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unlucky.
Extremely.
Can Delpo be a what if or no? I mean, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like he just the wrist injuries, like golly, like brutal.
Yeah. I think Brian Baker's a good what if, because not many people know of his story, but that was a good question. Thank you for that one. Guys, good episode today.
Yeah.
Got the Crusell interviews coming on right now, right after this.
Right.
It's a good one. So you're going to want to listen to it.
All right, this episode is once again brought to you by Aura Frames. I don't know about you guys, I'm the worst gift giver of all time. I'm always thinking, what should I get my parents, mother-in-law, father-in-law, my wife, my kids? I never know, so I get them nothing. Not this year. This year, I'm getting them the Aura Frame. It's awesome. It's like a picture frame, but within that picture frame, it's not one picture. It's as many pictures as you want and videos, and you can upload them to that picture or to the Aura Frame. You just get the app. It's super easy. So if you're on vacation, instead of texting your friends and family pictures, you upload it to the Aura Frame. Maybe they have it in their family room, maybe the bedroom, maybe the kitchen, and the pictures and videos automatically just go onto the Aura Frame. It's actually really cool. And you can give the Aura Frame now, instead of just giving them a blank Aura Frame for the holidays, and they're like, what is this? No, no, no. It's loaded with the pictures and videos already, so they've got the gift kind of ready to go. It's super cool. Everyone go check it out. Again, like I'm not someone that gives gifts ever. I actually am giving this gift this year. It's really cool. And for a limited time, save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $35 off Aura's best-selling Carver mat frames named number one by Wirecutter by using the promo code NOTHINGMAJOR at checkout. That's AuraFrames.com, promo code NOTHINGMAJOR. This deal is exclusive to our listeners and frames sell out fast. So order yours now to get it in time for the holidays. Support the show by mentioning us at checkout. Terms and conditions apply.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
All right, now it's time. Let's welcome on Carousel. He's got a fascinating story. Came to play college tennis at UCLA from Brazil. Now he's one of the biggest online tennis creators, almost has 200,000 followers, subscribers on YouTube. Has some great insight on what that world is like. So with that, let's get into this great interview.
All right, everyone. Our next guest is Carew Sell. So for those of you guys who don't know Carew, Carew is a professional tennis player. Carew played college tennis at UCLA. Correct me if I'm wrong, career high 258. And you're also a YouTube tennis creator and one of the best and most popular YouTube tennis creators in tennis, which is pretty cool. So I want to start, go back a decade. You're from Brazil. You came over here to play college tennis at UCLA. Take us through that journey a little bit. How did you decide to play college tennis here at UCLA and get hooked up with Billy Martin there?
Well, I was actually going to Florida State, which is kind of crazy. I was kind of verbally committed there. And then last second, I had a guy just kind of working for me for like transcripts and things like that, because it's a little complicated when you're, you know, not from America. And he sent some cold emails, just like Stanford, UCLA, whatever. And I think UCLA, was it Daniel Kozakowski? Remember Stevie? He had gone pro, and there was a couple like spots on the team because I think some scholarship opened up. Mark was on the team. We had met in Orange Bowl 16s. We both like were in qualies, and I made semis. He made finals. We both lost a guy here from SoCal, Halabian. And we had just like connected at Orange Bowl. And I think Billy just asked Mark, was like, is this guy decent? And Mark was like, yeah, he's actually pretty good. You should get him. And they said they had a spot. I just told Forrest, hey, like I'm going to UCLA. Never visited. Didn't meet Billy. Didn't meet anybody. Just came like cold turkey. And yeah, I think it was actually Stevie's last year like that I got there, but like in the fall, in the spring.
You know, for you, you know, at any point, did you think, you know, the professional side was going to be possible for you, you know, after your first, second, third, fourth year? Or was that something that was just a box to tick? Like, I want to play pro tennis and I want to do certain things. Or did you think you could leave UCLA and actually, you know, make it at the time? You know, not now, but, you know, let's call it a decade ago.
When I was at UCLA, I really just committed to the college thing. I wasn't playing pros like in the summer. Like I was really just all in playing the college tennis and having that full experience. I actually kind of purposely chose a place that didn't have Brazilians because I think it's easy to go to a place where you are going to have like that community, but then you just sort of hang out with the Brazilians and you maybe don't get the full experience of being here. So that was a big part. And UCLA was like basically just all California guys when I was there. You know, it was all this Cali guys, Puget and myself as like the foreigners. And, we had just had a crazy recruiting class there with Novikov, Marcos, Dirk, Mackie, Gage. It was like actually pretty crazy there for a few years. And the team was just great. And I just wanted to enjoy that as much as I could. And I knew I was going to try after school, but I didn't know realistically what was going to mean playing pros because it's so expensive. I'm out of Brazil. I don't really have any financial backing at that point, but I just wanted to give it a go. But even then after school, I didn't really play for like a year. I was a volunteer at Pepperdine for a year. So it took me a while to want to go play again.
Like, was there one moment that stuck out to you in college? Like, you know, a dual match or, you know?
If I could go back, obviously that 2013 touched the net team, you know, like I wish we could go back.
I didn't want to bring it up, Karu. I'm sorry. You know, no, maybe
it's okay.
You want to give some context to that, or would you like me to give some context? Is it too painful?
No, you can give the context.
Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't want to bring it up, but yeah, Karu there. So the year after I left 2013, UCLA is playing Virginia in the finals. Now I'm drawing a blank. Was it Puget? Was Adrian?
Puget, yeah, at three.
So Adrian Puget Mitchell was three, Frank. Maybe playing two or three?
Three.
Match point, NCAA finals, hits a winner, or basically a winner, but touches the net like with his foot. It was like a drop shot. Ultimately, you know, you guys kind of storm the court. It gets called back, end up losing the finals. So I was hoping there'd be a better maybe memory of you guys for you that stuck out in college tennis, but that one kind of stings, I'm sure.
That one stings, but it was, you know, like I couldn't go back to that one because I did what I needed to do. It was just one of those like Puj, you know, he also kind of did what he needed to do, but touched the net. So
it's unlucky.
It's an unlucky one. I thought 2014, if I'm totally honest, the year 2014 was a year that the team was really close. We somehow convinced Billy to let us go to Coachella. So we went to Coachella, after losing to SC, we literally got beat up by USC, had everything packed in the car and went to Coachella. Came back the following week, beat SC at Pac-12s at Ojai. And the team was really tight. That was Mackie's first year. Gage had come in. Novikov, I think, left. So I think, you know, Clay was playing Unreal. The team was really, really tight. We beat SC a few times that year. And unfortunately, like we ended up losing to Oklahoma and USC took the title. And I thought that year we were really good. And really, again, close together. So I wish we could go back to that and finish that job. But I really enjoyed that year. I think it was really cool. And even my last year, we weren't that good, but we were scrappy. We came in as like number three seed, I think, or four seed, and we played some good ball, but we were lacking a little depth. So overall, like I just had such a good experience that to me, I wouldn't change much. It was a really great time.
Yeah. And, you know, just, I guess for some context on that is, you know, for you, like, you know, at UCLA at the time, just in, you know, those two universities close for you and me, it was, you know, Marcos Giron, top 100, Mackie McDonald, top 100. And then at SC at that time, it was, you know, Yannick Hanfman, top 100. Emilio Gomez was top 100. You know, guys were...
And multiple guys, like top 200, 250.
You know, if you go down the list, you know, we have probably 6 to 8 guys top 200. So the college tennis level was getting stronger and stronger. And, you know, you it's definitely a viable path for a lot of these guys who aren't doing well in futures and challengers and whatnot.
Yeah, it takes a long time, I think, to develop and maybe find your game, even if you're, you know, maybe really good, but physically maybe you can handle it. Like the tour is becoming more and more and more physical. So I think it's such a viable path. I think people understand it, but there's still certain places that don't truly believe in it. And they think in Brazil specifically, there's a lot of like sort of, if you're going to college, it's kind of the end of your career. I'm just kind of like, it's clearly not. You know, I had this argument with a guy online recently, or while during Wimbledon, that Wimbledon had, I think it was like something like 30.
It was like 27, like main draw college players or something like that. 29.
Main draw college players, something like that. And I was like, I literally listed every name for the guy in the comment section. I was like, here you go. Like every guy in the main draw that has college tennis ties. Obviously, it's not for like Fonseca. I understand that, but it's for the majority of players who are not Fonseca, I think is a great path.
Speaking of like online, sometimes you like to engage with people with things of that nature, with Wimbledon, with the tour, things like that. We a few weeks ago did a segment on like what it means to make it on tennis. What's your definition of a guy that, oh, that guy made it? That's all the context I'm giving to.
I think it's a guy that is playing basically a full tour schedule. You know, you're not really worried if you're gonna fall back into challenger and stuff like that. You're just out there in January. You make your calendar. Hey, I'm gonna be in this ATP events. I'm gonna play all the slams, and that's a guy who's just, you know, fully can live off tennis. Doesn't have to do YouTube things like that. I think that's the definition. I think that's, to me, the gold standard of like what we are looking for. Then you have your own personal challenges and your own, you know, why you continue to do it. If you don't think you're going to make it there, if you don't know if you're going to have that opportunity, then there's each person, I think, has their own, you know, engine and why it drives them. But I think in the most sort of like what each player is looking for, I think to me that's the definition, just full tour player.
I said top 100, just so you know.
Yeah.
But it's
but sometimes different. Even top 100, right? You're having to sneak in maybe a couple challengers here and there because like I'm defending some points and things like that. I think top, even like 75.
Top 100, I'm like, you made the show.
Yeah.
I want to pivot to your YouTube career. For our listeners that don't know, on YouTube, you're like the number one basically like YouTube tennis creator. You have 185,000 subscribers to your YouTube channel. Golf YouTube is huge. We know that. Mm-hmm. Tennis isn't as big, but like you're one of the guys leading that. How did you get into like the YouTube like content tennis creator space? When did that idea come into your head? Like, oh, I'm gonna go down this path and see where it leads me.
It was like about 6 years ago. We started in 2019. I had a friend from Brazil who played at Pepperdine, and we started mytennishq.com, just a website that, like, you know, for people to get for us to get organic traffic. So, like, we made articles like the most basic stuff, like how do tennis players qualify for Grand Slams? If you Google that, you know, you find our website, you click on it, like, we get some ad revenue. So that was kind of the business plan. But that business plan sort of started slowly dying down because of AI and things are changing in the Google algorithm. But my buddy was like, you like doing social media, like why don't you start, you know, doing some YouTube? I was like, sure. I'm just coaching at that point. I already quit my first sort of stint on tour. I was just kind of coaching. You know how it is. You're making decent money coaching, so you're not too worried. So I just kept pumping out content, and you know, it pretty quickly we saw like some growth. At the time I was like Naomi's hitting partner, so we obviously had a little content there that was like different and fresh, and people were like, whoa, like this is cool. And it just kind of kept growing. And we, at the time, you know, it was called My Tennis HQ, wasn't even my name, the channel. And it became a very heavily instructional, like, place. It wasn't about me playing pros. It wasn't anything like that. It was just instruction, getting people in the door. It's something I enjoy doing. I like the process of kind of creating the videos. So it started growing. And, you know, at the time, again, we're just kind of thinking the old kind of internet where people like would sell courses and things like that. That's kind of like, it was a big thing. I think in the 2010s, people made a lot of money doing that. But by the time we were big enough for that, it had kind of shifted. It was a little harder to do that stuff. But I just kind of kept making videos. I just kept doing stuff. I was coaching a lot. So when you're coaching a lot, you're getting sort of the same feedback from people. Like every lesson, it's like, oh, I'm struggling with this. And the next lesson, I'm struggling with the same thing. And you're like, clearly there's something here. Maybe I'll make a video about that. So I got a lot of my inspiration for lessons on that. And then slowly but surely, yeah, I just started playing some UTR events, things like that. And then we snowballed into, you know, playing professional tennis again. So
back on tour. That's
back on tour somehow. But yeah, it was never the plan to go back on tour, but it was cool that we grew. And golf is really what we look at. It's like, how can we kind of compete with golf and be similar to golf? And it was, you know, kind of my own way to do it.
So when you're doing, you start that, it's 2019, you're hitting with Naomi Osaka a lot. That's great content. Are you editing all the videos early on too?
Yeah, I did for the first 3 to 4 years, I did everything. The last 2 years I've had an editor.
This episode of Nothing Major once again is brought to you by Ghostbed. Okay, we're at that time of the year where everything and everyone just sort of feels tired. I definitely feel tired. I got kids in and out of the house, bringing in sickness from school. That's why it's very important to have a great mattress to sleep in. And that's where Ghostbed comes into play. I've been using it for a few months now. They are a family-run company founded by a team with more than 20 years of mattress making expertise. The cooling tech, I've talked about this before. The cooling tech, in my mind, is what separates Ghostbed from other mattresses. They have this technology that keeps you cool all throughout the night. It's backed by a 20-year warranty. The shipping is fast and free. You don't have to go to the store and go shopping and get raked over the coals on price for a mattress. You order it online and it shows up to your doorstep a few days later. You get a 101-night sleep trial guarantee as well to make sure it's the right thing for you. Personally, I've been using the Venus Williams Legend mattress. I think Sam Querrey is using that one as well. It's a big upgrade, more support, no low back pain. I wake up feeling fresh and ready to tackle the day. Right now, Ghostbed has tons of holiday deals with prices up to 50% less than comparable brands. Plus, listeners get an extra 10% off site-wide. So go to ghostbed.com/nothingmajor and use our promo code NOTHINGMAJOR at checkout. That's ghostbed.com/nothingmajor, promo code NOTHINGMAJOR for 10% off of their already reduced prices. So upgrade your sleep with Ghostbed, the makers of the coolest beds in the world. You will not be disappointed. Some exclusions do apply, so see the site for details.
Are you more into like the content creating side of things or trying to get your ranking up as a pro tennis player? Is there obviously you're making more, I'm assuming, on the content side of things in YouTube than you would be playing pro tennis this year. So is that more your focus, or do you actually like want to get your ranking and do you think you can get into the top 100?
I focus a lot more on my ranking than on the content when I'm playing. It's not really, I'm not gonna like sit here and be like, I know I can get to top 100, but I do think I can get to top 200. You know, I got to 258. Yeah. I was like right there. This year, unfortunately, just multiple injuries and probably it didn't play good enough too, but I, when I'm playing, I'm like really maybe a bit too serious about it. Like for myself, I actually should be enjoying a little bit more and allowing myself to make the content a little bit more and know that, you know, I have this and it's okay. So I can play a little freer, but when I'm in the thick of it, it's hard for me to do. So I am still, you know, highly focused on hopefully, you know, my main goal when I started playing again was to break my career high from like 2019. And I did it and I kind of smashed through that, which was really cool. And then, you know, I kind of had a bit of an open path to get to Grand Slams. And my goal is to just play a Grand Slam or play a few Grand Slams. That really is what I'm looking for. I think getting to, you know, 230, 220, top 200, I was right around that already. I just needed like one more good result. So I believe I can get there. It's just, yeah, you guys know how the tour is, you know, it wears you out. So has been, you know, it's been a bit of a tough year, but I think the break is going to help, you know, kind of get me like back into it once I'm back.
I got one more like kind of content question for you. What would you say is like the hardest? Tennis is hard, right? We've talked about all the time the challenges of the schedule, the tour, how tough it does on your body. Going like back to the content side of things and you making all these videos, what's the most challenging part of the YouTube side of tennis that people maybe wouldn't realize?
One, it's a lot of work. I mean, it's a ton of work to you know, come up with concepts that, you know, are going to be entertaining. They're going to, what I dislike the most about, you know, the social media part of it is that you are playing like an algorithm game. And algorithms are always changing. I'd say last year, I felt like up until this year, I thought that my content was more catered towards like my audience, or is really shown to my audience. Where these days, social media is not really social. It's about creating content that's for everybody, and hopefully, you know, it just gets picked up while someone is scrolling. Because that's where most of your views come from the watch next or the next scroll or whatever it is. So playing by the algorithms means that like you can't necessarily like make content that sometimes you think it's important, you know, like that, or you think it's part of my journey now that I'm injured, and people are like, why don't you make content about how you're, you know, getting that better? And I'm like, people don't really want to watch it. I've posted a few times and the video like won't do well. So I have to like be playing by a certain set of rules. And again, once you have the ad sponsorships and all that stuff, it's my full-time job. Like I can't go like coach for hours on day. Like this is what I have to do. So I flipped, you know, from making money from coaching to now making money on YouTube. And it just becomes a full-time gig and you're always thinking about it. And then thumbnails need to get better. Everything needs to get elevated. And I try not to rely too much on people coming to my channel. So it's like, it's not like just me, you know, hitting with pros, because otherwise it's like can be a bit unsustainable. But it's the hard part is that it feels like you need to keep like pushing the limit and push and elevating. And sometimes you just like, you know, you don't really have the time to do that while you're still competing on tour, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned you're making content for like the social world or whatever. Do you make content sometimes and think like how it's going to be not controversial, but like maybe divisive, where you're going to get multiple people like on different sides of things? Like, do you ever think of that side of, you know, creating content and trying to get like, you know, people's engagement that way?
Yeah, I think about it like a lot, and I'm trying not to be that person, but like there are topics where every once in a while you kind of have to mention, or you feel like you want to talk about and you know it's going to be a little divisive. I'm not trying to play that game. That is the best game to grow, like a lot by a lot. Like that's just, it's just the way it is. Like you're either trying to elicit some sort of like bad reaction or someone that's going to comment, you know, against what you're saying, or just like you're making content that is like relatable. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, then people are like, yeah, that happens to me too. So you're just making you're trying to make content like that. I'm trying to not do that as super often, but it is something I think about it sometimes as well. I just don't want to be like sitting around just being negative on social media for no reason, you know, like I don't think it's my place. But it is a way to grow for sure. It's just not what I do.
Do you, kind of like one quick like follow up there. Do you have like one take that's like been the most controversial, like that you'll die on, that you maybe don't agree with whatever, you know what I mean? That like the majority of people don't agree with.
I mean, when I talked about like, you know, the two-handed backhand, like just being slightly like more on the right side versus like a left hand forehand, that a lot of people, like I used to teach that. And one time I made a video like saying that like you actually have to be pretty strong on the right side through that shot, or the right hand especially. I got like a ton of like I've talked about this on every podcast I've ever been, like, because people were just like, this is wrong, this is right. I was like, dude, I got this, like, it was like Agassi talking about it. It wasn't like I just came out of nowhere. It was like we were out there and we were working with Marcus's back, and he was like really emphasizing that. And eventually I was like, whoa, like his back is looking a lot better. Obviously, there's nuance to it. There's people who are a lot more lefty, a lot more like left arm dominant and stuff like that. But that one, like, it's always comes back. I always talk about it in podcasts and things like that. But aside from that, nothing really. I mean, obviously, I've talked about a little bit of the Adderall stuff on tour. But again, I'm not really, like, you know, it's not my place. It's like, what? It's whatever. It's happening. It's not happening. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, you're not going to get any arguments from us when you talk backhand on here, so it's fine.
That's for sure. And Karu, I got some more probably like rapid fire, quick fire questions for you in our mixed bag section we do. And on the content side, what's one non-tennis creator you study or look at or follow to get better at your own stuff? Or do you have anything that you look at to kind of, you know, model your stuff
after? I was
after?
Just kind of into OG, like not even like Casey Neistat back in the day. He was kind of the go doing the daily vlog. So I kind of grew up on that YouTube stuff. These days I like looking at the golf creators like Grant Hovart and things like that. They've been able to create such good, you know, like content communities. Bryson is really good there. So I'm always looking at other creators that way, but I try not to like watch too much of like the tennis content. So I stay fresh on what I want to do.
And then most overrated trend in tennis content at the moment.
Anything that's too overly complicated. Every time I see things that feel, it's like, why are we kind of reinventing the wheel? Like, I just like, I've never heard this. Like, I've been around a lot of great coaches and I'm just like, lag on the forehand? What are we talking? Isn't that just acceleration? Like, there was always like things that is just like, I think people like break down things in like slow motion and they get way too technical about it, where it's like, I think, you know, it makes the audience think that pro players were always doing something that is overly complicated in practice and that's why we're good. But the reality was just like, we've just been playing since we're kids and we were, I don't know, all we want to do is just like play points and play sets and have a good time, you know? So every time I see something that's too overly complicated, too analytical, we're analyzing someone's shot in slow motion, I'm just like, I just don't think that's real in tennis. We're not playing golf. You know, golf is a lot more technical that way. And obviously, tennis is a bit more dynamic.
Do you now, because you've been so successful coaching online, if you're watching a match, first round Wimbledon, do you find yourself like critiquing guys the way they play more so than like pre-coaching? Like if you watch Medvedev, you're like, this guy's forehand, it looks awful. Or, you know, things like that. Or can you just let it slide?
Well, I'd say earlier in my sort of YouTube career, coaching career, I was a lot more like technique focused. So yeah, I would see Medvedev early on. I'd be like, I don't know how this guy is good. I didn't understand it. And then after just sort of being on tour again and being around like just high level players like all the time, you just kind of realize that everyone does their thing and they figure out it their own way. So I'm a lot more like conscious of like, you know, someone's like identity, maybe it's like, this is what they do. Like, this is what Jensen Brooksby does. It's like, yeah, maybe he's never going to hit, you know, bomb serves, but he's going to beat you a different way. And then there's so many contrasts. And I think that keeps the game exciting and fun. So nowadays, like if I was coaching again, I'd be a lot more about like, you know, just good attitude and just being around and being and continue to do the thing for a long time versus getting too technical about things.
Can I ask you a hypothetical real quick? If someone in the top 20 in the world right now asked you to coach them, quit playing tennis yourself, quit doing YouTube, be my full-time coach, would you do it, you think, right now?
No.
No. You still have the belief and you still want to continue your own tour, your own path.
What if it's Fonseca? You know, you got to go back to the homegrown talent. Come on now.
Of course you would.
Fonseca, you probably do it, but to me, like,
I quit this pod to coach Fonseca right now.
It's just like he wants that, Sam.
To me, it's tricky because, like, you know, I don't really love like being on tour, right? And the fun thing about being on tour is playing the matches. So, you know, I traveled with Marcos for a little bit. I traveled with Naomi for a little bit, and. It was cool, but at the same time, I was like, I was just kind of like there. Like, and then the exciting thing came, which was the matches, and I didn't even get to play. So I'm still like maybe a bit too selfish about that. So if I'm going to be on tour and traveling 30 something weeks a year, I at least want to be the one p- playing. I think coaching, I'd rather, you know, be coaching here in LA and maybe doing like, you know, still hopefully working with some pros, but I don't know if I'd do a full schedule of like tour coaching. You know, I want to be here near next, you know, close to my wife, close to my dogs and kids maybe soon. So, you know, that's just kind of where I'm at.
And there's one kind of guy that you could follow around for an entire year and vlog their tennis life. Who's the most captivating outside of the top, you know, but you know, top five guys, you know, like the Rogers, Rafas, Carlos, Sinners. Give us somebody that you'd love to kind of follow around and see their journey throughout a course of a season.
Oh, that's a, I mean, obviously Fonseca is a great, it's a great one here. Who else? Oh, let me think about this one. I wasn't ready for this one. I mean, I think Medvedev would be a really interesting character to you know, I hit with him. I think he'll be a I'll be very interested in his process because he's so different. He's so unique. Right. But like, you know, it's just, I do think he would be really fun. Low key, because he's so not public, I would actually be interested in seeing what Tommy is doing. In a way, I do think Tommy, he doesn't really have this like big social media presence. He's not doing like much of that stuff. He's a bit more like on the quiet side, but I really love his game. And I love his sort of, he's a bit of this persona that he's going against that, like, I need to be popular on social media or anything like that. So there's something almost like a mystique to him that way that I think would be pretty interesting. So yeah, I think those two would actually be fun.
Hopefully more players like start building maybe YouTube channels like you're doing or like we see on golf, because that would be – people want to watch it.
People want to watch it. The only thing I'd say, it's like it's tough because the players don't really have that much time to do it like themselves. So it's like it's a bit – sometimes it's a production team and then it becomes a little like watered down. Like obviously you can do it right. But I think, you know, remember Tsitsipas used to vlog a little bit and he was good at it. He was like really good at it. Like at least at the editing and the stuff like that. And so, you know, obviously it's hard because they don't really have the time to be on the channels and stuff like that. But, you know, look, I try to get players on the channel like a good amount, you know, like I'm always reaching out, trying to be like, hey, would you be on the channel? Like just to practice, you know, Stevie was on the channel, like, a long time ago, we played a set at Carson. That's why I actually got fired in Carson, because I kept filming. I worked at Carson, yeah. Kept filming there, and they fired me. But
that Carson, for those of you who don't know, is like a USTA facility.
Yeah, it's a USTA facility that I couldn't be recording. But, you know, I practiced with Taylor, and I actually beat him, and he was really cool about it. He's like, yeah, just wait until, like, he was switching to Hugo Boss. But the point is, I try to, I want the players to understand, is like, you come to the channel, like, first of all, I can play, like, we can practice. It's just going to be a pretty chill, casual day. It's not going to be this like media day, right? But number two, it goes a long way with the audience in a sense, like, even if you don't have your channel, but you come to my channel and we talk a little tennis, we play some tennis. Usually the comments are like, whoa, he's like a really nice guy. I didn't really know this side of him, or that's awesome that he allowed you to post this and things like that. So he actually goes a long way into sort of like humanizing the players. But man, it's difficult to get players on the channel. It's so hard, like, because you're dealing with the agents, you're dealing with them, you know, not wanting to be filmed or something like that. I'm like, why? Like, what is the harm here? I'm not asking you to tell me your secrets. We're just playing a little tennis. But we are so far behind that. You go in golf, you know, like new driver comes out, you know, you got Nelly Korda, Rory McIlroy in three different YouTube channels. They're getting millions of views for that. But it just doesn't happen the same way in tennis. And he's been like pulling teeth, trying to get some players on the channel. And that's unfortunate. I hope it changes, but it's something that everyone is still behind. It's not just like sort of the media part of it. It's like everyone kind of doesn't really understand it yet.
No, we're in the same boat. We get as many no's as you do, maybe more. Like,
yeah.
And we have some big names in tennis between the four of us. And like, we get no's all the time from players. It's the hardest thing, like you're saying, to get people to even come on. And then you feel bad asking, and then you try to go through the agent, and then you don't want to ask again. But yeah, I'm with you. We hope that that culture changes. And thanks for coming on, man. That's what we got for you. We appreciate it. That was really fun. Hopefully people go check out your new YouTube channel, and we're cheering for you. We want you to get what ranking are you trying to beat? Top 230?
Top 200. Like, I want to get to 200, play right. Grand Slams, and you know, from there, we never know. You know what I mean? You can do a Vacheron kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Vacheron's giving life to everyone ranked outside 200.
He's literally giving everybody life, dude. Thanks for having me. Cool. If you guys ever want to come on the channel, do a little work, let me know.
No, we're good. I was joking. No, we're two of us are in LA, so we'd love to.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
all right, see you guys.
Cool. See you,
thanks, Karu. All right, thanks to Karu for coming on. Go check out Karu's YouTube channel, guys. It's pretty cool. Again, he's like the foremost like YouTube tennis creator guy, so it's pretty cool. That's the Friday episode. We'll be back Monday. Again, follow us on X, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok. I wish there was a way to determine who's listening to this and hitting the subscribe. It's
everybody is, thanks to you.
Anyway, we appreciate everyone that listens, and we'll see you guys next week.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.